ते वासुदेवाय नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, The Battle Between the Demigods and Vritrasura. This morning, text number 11. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Dadichi Muni, the son of Artava, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As indicated by the words Pare Bhagavati Brahman Yatmanam Sanayam, Dadichi placed himself as spirit soul at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, one may refer to the incident of Dhritarashtra's leaving his body as described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.55. Dhritarashtra analytically divided his gross material body into the five different elements of which it was made, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and distributed them to the different reservoirs of these elements. In other words, he merged these five elements into the original Mahat Tattva. By identifying his material conception of life, he gradually separated his spirit soul from the material connections and placed himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example given in this connection is that when an earthen pot is broken, the small portion of the sky within the pot is united with the larger sky outside the pot. Mayavadi philosophers misunderstand this description of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Sri Ramanuja Swami, in his book Vedanta Tattvasara, has described that this merging of the soul means that after separating himself from the material body made of eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, mind, and intelligence, the individual soul engages himself in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Kara. The material cause of the material elements absorbs the material body and the spirit soul assumes its original position. As described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Swarupoy Krishnera Nitya Das, the constitutional position of the living entity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. When one overcomes the material body through cultivation of spiritual knowledge and devotional service, one can revive his own position and thus engage in the service of the Lord. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Dadichi Muni, the son of Artava, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. So Dadichi Muni was a practitioner of mystic yoga, Astanga yoga system, although he did so as a devotee. In the second canto, such people are referred to by mystic bhakti yogas. The mystic yoga system, the Astanga yoga system, is used by many different groups, Mayavadis, yogis. Not all of them are devotional. But the Patanjali Yoga Sutras do recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the super soul is in there. Although other yogis follow the atheistic Sankhya, which makes no mention of super soul. But it is, so the yoga system is used in different ways for liberation by both personalists and impersonalists. So here, Prabhupada wants to point out that these words, Pare Bhagavati Brahmani Atmanam Sanayanjaha. To the Supreme Bhagavati, Personality of Godhead, Brahmani, also Bhagavati, Brahmani, these same reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Brahman, Atmanam, himself, the spirit soul, he offered and then gave up his body. So the word Bhagavati is here because he places himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this process has already been described, mystic yoga's leaving body and merging into Brahman. This is merging into Brahman is right here described, although Bhagavati is specifically mentioned. But you see this Brahman, Brahmani Atmanam, you could think it's just describing merging, becoming one. But that's actually a true description also. It may appear that the spirit soul, when he enters into Brahman, loses his identity. But in fact, he does not. From a certain point of view, the soul, the individual soul, may disappear from sight. Prabhupada uses two examples. One, of a standard example of a green bird entering a green tree. Is lost. Especially in India, you see these little green parrots all over the place. So you can sit around, and after a while, you'll see a green bird entering into a green tree. Everybody sees them all the time. And they disappear. You can see whole flocks of them vanish into green trees, as a matter of fact. And you can't see them because it's the same color of the leaves. But they don't lose their individual identity. They just become indistinguishable, from our point of view, from the tree. And then another example Prabhupada used, more in line with our experience, watching a jet airplane take off and fly off into the sky, vanishes into the sky. So you may stand there and think, wow, look at that jet, you know, it just became smaller and smaller and the point, and then it's gone, you know. But he's still there. It didn't disappear. So in the same way, so from a certain point of view, it may seem that the soul disappears, but he doesn't. So anyway, the process is described here. He mentions in connection with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, you remember, was saved by his half-brother Vidura. At the end of his life, Dhritarashtra, having spent his time backing up his son in his attempt to secure the kingdom from the Pandavas, lost everything. All his sons were dead. And he was an infamous man, really, because he had backed the wrong side. And Yudhisthira was king. And Dhritarashtra and his wife were living in Yudhisthira's house. Yudhisthira was very magnanimous, recognized Dhritarashtra, just like his father, and took care of him very nicely, and gave him all honor and respect, just according to the proper etiquette of the Vedas. And so Dhritarashtra was feeling pretty good. He was attached to his position, even though actually this was the man that had defeated him and killed all his sons. Are they still, you know, he was attached to his position. He saw, you know, from a certain point of view, everything was fine. So anyway, his sharp-tongued younger half-brother Vidura came back and lit into him and said, asked him, "What are you doing? You know, you're living here, you're eating the remnants of the food of the man that killed your son. You're sitting here thinking you're still the king. You're enjoying all these royal prerogatives when actually you're in disgrace. Moreover, you're getting old. Your teeth are falling out, everything. You're losing your power of digestion, your muscle tone. You're going to die very soon, and you're sitting here just like a fat cat householder, ignoring everything." So he convinced Dhritarashtra to leave with him, and then engaged, Vidura taught him, engaged Dhritarashtra in the same process of sitting and doing breathing exercises and so on by yogic process, and then leaving the body in a controlled way. So this has been described. It's also described in the second canto. So there's some system by which analytically the yogi manages to separate out the elements of the material body and merge them back into the mahatattva. What he does is reverses the creative process. And in this process becomes detached, you see, separates out his real identity from the false identity. We also, in the Isha Upanishad, let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Vayu or Anilam Amritam. So this is what happens by this process. But it's a process of becoming detached from false material identification, separation of the self from the material body that the yogi does in a certain way. He says he gradually separated his spiritual soul from material connections and placed himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now we do the same thing. We achieve the same thing in a different sort of a way. But the same achievement is there in the bhakti yoga process. And we also become established in Brahman. When the process is completed, a pure devotee may move around on this earthly planet and appear to be doing so many things, but actually has no material connection whatsoever, because the impetus for his action does not come from the soul. The impetus from that, the body, is simply, Prabhupada said, that the Lord directly takes control of the senses of a pure devotee. A pure devotee simply remains absorbed in spiritual activities. It doesn't have any real material connection, even though he goes on. Doesn't have to give up the body. What happens here to the mystic yogi is, in this process of leaving the body, he also raises the soul up the chakras by controlling the breath from the heart to here, to the palate, to between the eyes, and then to the Brahmarandra, which is right here. There's a little place where all the skull bones come together. You know, the soft spot in a baby is what's left when that's over. There's a little tiny hole. This is the Brahmarandra, also described as a 1,000-petal lotus and everything. And then at the right time, when he's ready, he leaves his body. Psh, the air. He blocks the anus and other places where the life airs could explode outward. And bang, blows out right here. And the soul leaves the body via this Brahmarandra. This is the way to go. It says that if a person dies in an elevated way, say the mode of goodness, the soul will leave out of this exit, the mode of passion out of the mouth, and the mode of ignorance out of the anus. And so that determines their fate, where they go. So anyway, this is the method out to exit here. And if you do it this way, as soon as the soul leaves the body bursts into flames. You can imagine the energies there. I mean, this is a bag of water, mostly. So it takes a lot of heat to burn up bodies. There are cases, by the way, at least if you think that's a little mythological, bodies bursting into flames. There are, since a couple of centuries in the West, there have been a number of mysterious cases of people dying of what appears to be spontaneous combustion. They're on the medical records, where people died by burning up. What the cause is, nobody knows. But they find circumstances when this person was here, sitting, a lady sitting at her dining room table, and she burned up. All that's left is, her left foot. Everything else is burnt. The heat was so intense that the silverware on the table is melted. But there's like a limited circle, and the heat was so intense that it actually burned up the human body. Like a crematorium, they gotta gotta have a big fire to cremate somebody. It's pretty intense. There are a number of cases about this reported all over the world of people dying from what they call spontaneous combustion. In fact, there's a Dickens novel where this happens to a character, and he has a long defense of it in a foreword or something. Bleak House is a character that dies of spontaneous combustion. The records are there. It can't happen. How does it relate to this? Well, I don't know. Maybe somebody left their body at just the time there's a right astrological configuration, and they, I don't know. That's a speculation. But anyway, in the Vedas, the account is there that yogis who leave their body like this way, the body bursts into flames, which is what happened to Dhritarashtra. And then he was inside a hut, and that hut caught on fire. And then Gandhari immolated herself on that fire. So this is quite a process here. But it's the way that the yogi separates himself out. He has to also separate himself, if he's complete, from the subtle body. If he maintains material desires, and he separated himself, identity from the gross body, but still maintains some subtle identity, then he has to go to Maharloka, Tapaloka, Gyanaloka, Satyaloka, one of these higher planets, and then perform further austerities and penances, and then become free from subtle identification a little later on. So this is one process. Krishna consciousness is less spectacular in some ways. Krishna tells us that a devotee doesn't have to worry about leaving the body at the right time, at the right space, and it doesn't really matter. These kinds of technicalities. But because the devotee by the bhakti yoga process becomes identified with transcendence also by complete absorption. So the process of Krishna consciousness is also complete absorption. Prabhupada says two things. One has to overcome the material body. I mean, that's our process. Everywhere we see that there's so many religions and spiritual processes, but the notion that people have to do something like this, overcome the material body, we don't see anywhere else as a deliberate aim. But that's actually our aim, to overcome the material body. What does that mean? To become free from the control of material nature, and to become free from all false identification with the material body. By what is the process? Cultivation of spiritual knowledge and devotional service. So here's that pair again and again, jnana and vijnana. There's the first of all, spiritual knowledge. We have to understand our first proposal that we are not this body. And analytically also, we have to separate ourselves from the body. We understand what the soul is. The soul is the seer or the witness of activities. The symptom of the soul is consciousness. I am that consciousness, and I am not this body. So the soul sees besides himself all of the things. So just separate ourselves. Right now we think we are seeing with these eyes, and there's ourself. Here's the boundary between the self and the not-self. Now we have to just analytically shove that boundary back. Here's myself, and this is my environment. But actually, I'm also conscious of my eyes seeing, my hands working, my ears hearing. All my senses are operating, and I'm conscious of my senses operating. So then I can understand that the seer being different from the seen, that what I am and these senses are two different things. So we have to shove the boundary back. That also, this gross body is also the environment for me. Just as a person may be in a car. So in one sense, the highway is the environment for a car, just as the car is the environment for the driver. So you've got layers of environments. So also our environment is the material body. Then the next environment is the subtle body, which we identify with even deeper. If something goes wrong, if our arm gets cut off, there may be some shock to our sense of identity, but we get used to it. But if something goes wrong with our subtle body, there's some dysfunction, mental dysfunction, then we think, oh, I'm crazy, or we really identify with it. And somebody gets Alzheimer's disease, we think they're gone. You know, somebody has some disease and they're paralyzed, they can't talk, we think he's in there, but he can't communicate. But when somebody's mind breaks down, we don't think they're in there and they can't communicate. We think they're gone. That's because we identify more closely with the subtle body. But actually, when the subtle body breaks down, they're also in there and they can't communicate. It's just the central processing unit is broken instead of the peripherals, you know. But he's in there. So we also are, just as we're conscious of our eyes seeing, our hands moving, our senses working, we're also conscious of our thinking, feeling, willing. That's coming from the mind. We're witnessing. So finally you have to get back to that, just the pure witness. The isolated seer who sees everything else. That's you. And these other things are working by mechanisms over which we don't understand and over which we have no control. Say, hey, I'm a spirit soul. I've got this body. I've been using it for years. Right? Why can't I tell you how I move my hand? Somebody sees you do something, you know, how do you do it? I don't know. I have no idea. Very nice. You know, I can do things, pick up a glass, you know. They try to get a robot to do this. It takes professors years and years of work, you know, before the thing gets crushed, puts it down, sticks it in his eye, you know. But I do it very easily. How do I do it? I can't give an account of it. I know that if I practice a little bit, it comes easier and easier. It takes accomplishment. Now, I have to practice. I can learn how to type, you know, very quickly. And somehow or other, I just think the word, and the word types out. I don't have to think B-L-O-C-K. I just see block, and it goes boom. I don't even think. It just does it. I don't know how I do that. I can't tell you. I can't explain it. I don't know how the connections work. In fact, I have no connection with this material body. I have different desires and wishes, and they happen. This whole material body is part of this vast machinery of material nature, and it's working under somebody else's command. And sometimes my wishes get honored, sometimes they don't. Usually kind of goes along with me, but I don't know. I can lose control at any minute. And my mind, I don't understand how that works either, but somehow it's working. So I'm just going along saying, hey, I'm in it for the ride. And actually what enjoyment and suffering I go, you know, that's also not caused by me. It's all being caused by material nature, and I'm just sitting here, skating along. So I really have no control. So I'm the seer. So we should understand this, that I'm one thing, and my body and my mind are something else. Understand it analytically. There's the seer, the soul, who is just pure consciousness and illuminates everything else. The seer is one thing, and the objects that he sees are something else. Of course, consciousness always illuminates, just like when light reveals anything else, it reveals its own presence. So there's self-consciousness that goes along with it. But other than that, just the ability. So the soul is the experiencer that ends up having some kind of autobiography out of the whole thing. This happens to me. Because he identifies himself. Actually, I have no more to do with this body than I have to do with somebody else's. This is just the one, by the laws of material nature, that I have gotten associated with. Whose pleasures and pains I falsely identify as my pleasures and pains. So that's the analytical side, the cultivation of spiritual knowledge. And we understand. I don't belong to the system of material nature. I am Brahman. I am not this body. And who is the controller of the system of material nature? That is Krishna. That is Super Soul. He's the one he's the intermediary factor. He's in my heart, and he controls me. And he also controls material nature. And he's making all these arrangements. It's because of Super Soul that when I say I want my hand to move, it moves. I want my hand to move, and there's a whole machinery of material nature that works. Krishna makes it work. So I can't do anything without his operation. So I came from that Super Soul, and all this material energy came from the Super Soul, and he's put us all together. Now, if I want to actually be reinstated in my... This is theory. Then the practice is devotional service. Because our business is to here to overcome the material body. So what's wrong with this system? The system is my false identification with the material body. That's causing all my suffering. So how do I get out of it? How do I break the spell that this is me? I have to engage in the service of the Super Soul, devotional service. Otherwise, I won't be able to unwind the material creation, my identification with material creation. Because one thing is, as long as I'm trying to, I'm in the illusion of enjoying matter and exploiting matter, then in bewilderment, I'll identify myself with these material projects. I actually won't be able, with a clear mind, to make that kind of analytical distinctions that I just made. This requires discrimination. Here's matter, here's spirit. I won't be able to discriminate. I'll get confused. I'll lose interest. I'll fall asleep before I finish. I won't be able to maintain my conclusion. So we have to become detached. Jnana vairagya. They come together. So as long as we're attached to material nature and trying to enjoy its product, we won't be able to understand, I am not this body. So therefore we have to engage, absorb ourselves in devotional service. Those are activities that, even though they're performed with the present material senses, are not material activities and do not entangle us in the cause and effect of this material world. They're conducted by a different energy, the internal potency. And so those activities absorb us in transcendence, and then we can come to understand, I am not this body. Because the more we are engaged in those activities, the more remote we come from matter, and also we can begin to understand this realization, I am not this body. Because of the cessation of the activities of sense gratification. As long as we're engaged in the activities of sense gratification, or not even engaged, as long as we think there's a future in sense gratification, as long as we're planning for sense gratification, or not even planning, but hoping against hope for sense gratification, anyway, have some investment in sense gratification, gross or subtle, we won't be able to become detached, and will not be able to understand, I am not this body. My sense of ego will be placed in the gross or subtle elements. My identity, because of attachment. Yes, this is me. I want my mind. I enjoy my mind. My mind is my playground. Or my gross body. I like my gross body. I want my gross body. I've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in this body. I want to be this body. As long as we want to be this body, or we want to be this mind, that's where we'll remain. And the only way we cannot want to be it is by becoming the servant of Krishna. And that's establishing our real identity. That's how we unwind ourselves, get ourselves disentangled from the control of material nature. That's what meant here, Prabhupada means here, by overcoming the material body. So if we're not busy overcoming the material body, we're simply busy dying. That's all. So this should always be our, what have I done today to overcome this? Nobody, this material body, no one else is taking up this struggle. This is what is unique in the Krishna consciousness movement. Although the teaching is not unique, but you don't see anywhere that people are actually putting it into practice. Maybe one or two isolated path, but here it is systematically not only putting into practice, but trying to put it into practice, but preaching it also. Whether we achieve so much success or not so much success, it's another thing, but we should always be trying to put it into practice. We may be more or less adept, more or less on some level or another level, but we can't forget this is our business. And we should be making plans to shut it down. You know, and just like the same way now, the American and Russian armies, they're going to scrap their tanks and scrap their missiles. So we have all these sense gratification plans and ideas. We should be scrapping them. Should be shutting the whole mechanism down one after another. You know, but the only way we're going to do that is that if we increase devotional service. Our practice is attachment to Krishna and then automatically detachment from matter. Otherwise, detachment from matter becomes difficult to the point of impossible. And so attachment to Krishna means positive activities of devotional service. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions? Want to say
something? Yeah, I was thinking about material energy. Because the material energy is the external source of Krishna. But you were talking, several weeks ago about the material manifestation being part of the model, shakti part of the model, which I associate with shakti properly, which is internal potency.
No, shakti just means potency.
Oh, I see. That's
doesn't mean internal, just potency.
But then it's not.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Shakti Tattva is usually used to refer to Krishna's energy. So Shakti Tattva is Radharani. Shakti Tattva includes the Jivas ultimately, although Jiva Tattva is often put in a separate category. It includes the reflection of the internal potency in the material world, which is Durga. She's Shakti Tattva, although she's consorted with Shiva rather than Krishna. So that's all Shakti Tattva, Radharani, Durga, so on. Both internal, external, all Shakti. Okay? Yeah? Hero?
So by enjoying and analyzing how the Vichis, he's sort of dispersing the elements of his body, more or less, by merging them back into the reservoir of those elements. But he's got to leave his bones behind so they can use them to make the thunderbolt. If his body's going to be annihilated and dispersed, there's something left for the demigods to use.
I don't know. Obviously, he doesn't burn his body up at the end, too. Usually when somebody leaves their body in this way, the body's burned. But so he's got some control over it. So the analytical process of merging and becoming free from the totality is not some kind of gross physical process, so far as I understand. At least when it's done here on this earth. When it happens in Brahmaloka, then it's a little different. But when it happens here on Earth, it happens in a subtle way. That's all I can tell you. But I wasn't taught this process. I can't explain it and can't teach it. Yeah, but somehow or other, because what's surprising to me is he obviously doesn't burst into enough fire. Usually, there's nothing left when they burn up. I mean, it's all just ashes, little cinders. When they cremate somebody, what's left is like cinders, which are bone chips. But he managed to do it, leave his body behind. And do you have any questions? No, sorry, Ruchi, who was somebody?
You were explaining this is the simple point about us realizing we're not our bodies and not engaging in sense gratification and engaging in social service like that. And I was thinking that they're very simple points, but still in all, it's so difficult to come to that understanding, even theoretically a strong understanding, because we find that again and again, we're drawn towards sense gratification.
Yeah.
But if devotional service even comes cut down.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? I know it's illusion, but I'm saying, how does one safeguard himself from going like that? This goes up sometimes in devotional service.
Well, all I can say is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it easy as somewhere you got to get a handle on it, on spiritual life, that you start the process. And it's the chanting of the holy names. That's what it is, congregational chanting of the holy names. People can just come together and do that periodically. And gradually, something will happen. It may take a long time. But there has to be some spiritual practice. And you just have to chip away at the false ego. Because the desire for sense gratification is so deeply rooted. And it's deeply rooted because ultimately it's a refusal of devotional service. When it comes right down to it, it's like saying to Krishna, no, I just simply won't. Mother?
Scientists have sort of discovered a process in which they have divide.
Yeah, cyrogenetics, right?
Yeah,
cyrogenetics. Or something, yeah.
Yeah, but quite a nut in a way like that.
Right.
But what happens to the soul? It
takes another birth. Soul's long gone. They'll never crank him up again. You know, he's dead. He's dead. You know, Walt Disney will not come back. There's a rumor that he's frozen. I don't know if it's true or not. Oh, you can put somebody in deep hibernation. That's another thing. That's another thing. People go, you freeze somebody, they go to sleep for a long time. Like people who drowned in very cold water, they're revived again, you know, 30 minutes later, because the cold shut down all the systems of their body. Well, it's like a Hiranyakashipu came back too. There was nothing left for him but bones. But somehow or other he managed to keep the you know, life air in the bones. That's another thing. But if somebody dies and then you freeze the body with the notion that, you know, we're going to cure the disease, go and patch it up and jumpstart the thing, crank them back up again. Because everything is there, all his brains are there and everything. You know, that won't work. But if you freeze somebody before he dies, then I don't know. Maybe the soul can still stay in there somehow or other, in some kind of hibernation. That's another thing. Yeah. Well, just be food for future generations. Actually, when they just get eaten. That's my prediction. We better stop now. Oh, glorious to see the problem.
Krishna is the enjoyer, and we should get out of this world and decide for it. It's not getting through people's mind at all.
It will get to people's mind. We just have to push it. Got to your mind.